Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Advanced Warfare. Your main host, Ben, here. With me, as always, is my main man, Scott. And my dog is sitting to my right, chewing on a bone. She yells at me. It's because the bone fell under the desk. So if you hear that, it's not my fault. But, Scott, what's happening?
Not much. It's been relatively quiet on the GW front. It seems like they've released almost everything they plan to do.
Somewhat.
I think there's some stuff coming, and like they kind of had like some weird preview thing with like Terminator in an eyeball of some kind.
That was a Tyranid Warrior. I mean, it's pretty much confirmed that they're going to do Tyranids and Blood Angels in the first box.
Well, that was the rumor. And
but
then
look, all suddenly it's a Dark Angel in that eye, though. Might not be Blood Angels, might be Dark Angels instead.
Well,
who might come with that? Oh, because we know Sanguinius isn't coming back. If they bring back Sanguinius, the horse heresy didn't happen.
That's true.
But on a side note, though, there's actually some fan fiction out there that's quite interesting, that it is not Horus that actually hurt the Emperor, but Sanguinius, because he went crazy and had the Black Rage. And he killed Horus, and the Emperor had to stop Sanguinius. That was kind of an Uno reverse. I thought that was kind of cool. But anyway, The Lion, he might be coming out. And then we've talked about this before, but I think they're due another Primarch just because they released Angron. And you know what? I'm not necessarily a fan of bringing back the Primarchs, but I am at the same time because they're a cool thing of the past. But sometimes the past needs to stay the past. But anyway.
The story makes sense, but
I don't know about Bobby G and your reign. I don't know what they got going on, but
but I could see like Rust coming out of like the Maelstrom as like some weird Wolfen thingy, that like Primarch Wolfen thing. He'd be like Angron size and go toe to toe with him or something.
Yeah, Korax needs to throw away his tissue and from crying in whatever tower he's in, and come back to the Imperium.
Yep.
Because yeah, my boy Siggy can't come back because Abaddon's. Anyway.
Yeah. Some interesting news this week, though. I think it was this morning, I think, is when it came out.
This morning?
Yeah. The rumor has it is someone got ordered Dante off of the online order, and they got sent a Primaris Dante. So GW put out an article today talking about Primaris Dante. And that kind of, that does line up with the rumors we've heard about the starter box for 10th edition, that it's Blood Angels versus Tyranids with a new Dante model in there. So I guess that lines up, you know, maybe I think there was like a Tyranid, wasn't it Hive Tyrant Prime or something like that was the other thing.
Yeah, like a new Swarmlord Prime or Hive Tyrant Prime too.
Yeah, something like that. So that'll be interesting if that shows up in there too.
Whatever
the model
can do to make Nids more interesting, they have failed with those newer models, the other monsters. They are terrible, bro. Like the horror specs, oh my.
Yeah.
Some better rules.
Parasite's pretty good though. Parasite's cool.
You know what? I do like the Parasite Mortrex. He's really nice. Yeah.
But Dante looks like his model he looks like he's on like a 50 probably, which isn't as big as Helbricks, but close. And then
Helbricks on a 60.
And then
with the wipey boy.
Wipe. Yeah, and he's probably twice as tall as the old model, it looks like, because he's up on top of his tactical pillar or rock.
Rock that everybody's getting.
I think it's a pillar. This is actually a pillar. So
tactical stone.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody's got it. You got to get your foot up on your tactical rock.
It is. I think it's just funny that somebody ordered the old Dante and got the new one. Right. And then GW's like, just kidding, we did it on purpose. Charades.
Working in an R&D group in a very large company as myself, I understand how this happened.
That's
I can't say we've done it, but I could definitely see the failure breakdowns that could cause something like this to happen.
Like everything lined up, like this is how they're going to buy the new Dante, yeah. And somebody just accidentally hitting a line of code a little bit too soon, so the old Dante proc'd a new Dante send, And then the warehouse is like, they must have put it out early. Send it.
I mean, honestly, I guarantee you they're probably their warehouse people aren't. They don't probably don't even play 40K or anything like that. This is just a job to them. They're like, all right, part number XYZ, let's go pick it and send it.
Cause yeah, that's true. That's probably true. But let's talk about some of these win rates that you were talking about earlier. We got some data on the stat check, which is kind of interesting. We have several factions overperforming, which we knew. But this breaks out all the stuff that we talked about before into the sub-factions more. So it's a little bit more clear data. It's not everything lumped together like Space Marines, because obviously Imperial Fists and, like, let's say Templar are worlds apart in strength. Even their Primarch is the same. Like Imperial Fists are just garbage compared to Templar.
Yeah, and even, like, so an example is like, so Iron Hands has a 57% win rate. They have an over rep of 1.02, so they're just right online. They're 4% of the player base. So, you know, one in 25 games at a tournament, you're going to play Iron Hands. You know, the higher up you go, the better, more odds you're going to get them because they win. But like base Iron Hands have a win rate of 52%. So if you're just playing pure Iron Hands, it's 52% win rate. And that's 2/3 of the population of Iron Hands. But if you're playing Master Artisans and Whirlwind of Rage, which is just under 20% of the population, 68% win rate. A couple of others have really small, like less than 1% of their population, but like Long Range Marksmen, Master Artisans, that's like 6% of their population, 71% win rate. So these custom traits underneath Iron Hands, those are, most of them are all well above the 62. I think only one of them is not, and that's Master Artisans and Scions of the Forge. I don't know what that is. That's at 50%. So it still wins half its game. So somebody went 3-3 with that at an event, is be my assumption. It's pretty interesting how stark it is, and I really hope GW is looking at that and going, holy crap, if you give an army that, you know, when it moves and shoots heavy weapons, it doesn't take a penalty, a free hit reroll every time, plus rerolling once because they're in their super doctrine, they do a lot of damage and they win a lot of games. And then Whirlwind of Rage, so you have your melee component in there too, can still do a lot of damage.
I can't wait for the customizer chapter to go away. I think that should be like reserved for special armies like GSC or stuff like that, where they don't, you know, that's one where the player skill should come into more play, and the fact of just how their cults function, it should be like that. Like, well, we worship the four-arm Sky Daddy with our seismic cannons. That's just what we do.
Yeah, like, Gene Stealer cult has actually broke out between four. There's several factions that have a decent amount of play, like there's the Accustomed to Toil, Cold-Eyed Killers, Industrial Infinity, and War Convoy is the most popular one right now, and that's 25% of their population. They have a 63% win rate, which is 4% above their average.
Yep, and I think that's the one that's most popular, that's what's being played in our league right now by two individuals.
Yeah, yep. And then there's Pauper Princes, which I think that's what Nick Rose won his event with. That one has a 75% win rate, but only just under 4% of their population. So not as common, but also still really good. And I think Pauper Prince is the one that has the mini transhuman, which is
the named one with the mini transhuman, not the your own.
Yeah, if you're like, if you're T3, mini transhuman is huge. Huge.
Otherwise, Gladiator Reapers go burt, and they still go burt.
Yeah, I mean, they still almost, but you could really split fire it out then and just murder crap.
Yep.
Another one, Dark Angels. They just have the one. They don't break it out between Ravenwing and Deathwing. I think that's a little. I don't think that can be done automatically. So that's unfortunate there. Because I'd be curious to see what that breakdown would be. Is if the pure Deathwing. Let's see what's another fun one that you. Oh, Space Wolves. So the most popular one, the two most popular is Born Heroes and Whirlwind of Rage, and then regular Space Wolves. Regular Space Wolves have a 43% win rate. Born Heroes Whirlwind of Rage is 55%.
That's a pretty big discrepancy between the two.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like Born. And, like, that's one thing you'll notice, like, very, very common between, like, all of, like, the Marines, like, that can take customized ones. Whirlwind of Rage is up there on almost all of them. Like, their top, the one that everyone is top win rate, it's almost always Whirlwind of Rage.
It's a little bit overtuned, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's like it's good or something.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, so like, yeah, but other, I mean, Custodes kind of, Emperor's Chosen is the number one by a lot. 50, that's over 50% of their player base, 53%, which lines up with what their win rate is. But Solar Watch, that one's 58%. That's a new, kind of the new one that you're seeing a lot of people running. The Warden, the big Warden groups, they're running them as Solar Watch. That's
like an advanced charge.
Yeah, yep. And you declare it, you pick it in your charge phase. So if you murder have stuff and shoot and you want to switch once when it's on, so that, you know, you could put that on like either the Banner Boy or the Bike Captain, because the Bike Captain's fast, so he can keep up with something else that's advancing without advancing, and then give them the ability to charge and then come in with them too. So, yeah. So I've been diving into Custodes again. So,
yep. And I wanted to talk about this. This just kind of gives you an idea of where the meta's at. But there's something that we need to bring up that is unusual, and what that is that over the past weekend that we didn't, you know, in between episodes, there have been winners of GTs from most factions, which is highly unusual. That has, I can't remember a time where that was the thing. So it's working. The balanced data slate, they're listening. It's doing well. I'm not saying that it's perfect by any means, because I feel like sometimes they use data and like anybody does this, right? Even Congress people do this, where they'll take small segments, isolate it, and then use it as evidence as to why something's correct or incorrect, right? It's just done all over humanity. But and GW does a little bit of that with their Marines and stuff like that, which why I had Scott pull this up, talk about it, is that we could see a more broader spectrum. You can really see the outliers there, like Whirlwind of Rage, that needs to get toned down. GSC needs to get toned down. Something needs to happen. But what I think is going to be the struggle is that they have, I don't remember, I haven't counted factions in a long time, but they have 30-something factions to balance. And when you add the amount of sub-factions that they have currently, you have hundreds. So being able to look at this and isolate stuff is a bonus, but I don't want it used in the fashion that it is justifying not changing something because some portion of whatever faction is underperforming. As an example, Guard have not been dominant like people would thought with the Karshkins with the Mortal Wounds and the Lehman Rust spam, because they still suffer from the same problem they had before the Codex is, which is their objective holders that are OBSEC are wieners. They're T3 with no invuln. 5-up save, 4-up save, whatever it is. It's just, they can't hold an objective. And I think they're dropping primary. I think that they're, if we were to look at their secondary score, it'd be pretty high on their secondaries. But I think they struggle with primary. But using their win rate to say that they're fine doesn't really show the whole picture. They have 4 or 5 usable data slates, in my opinion. The rest are a little bit either overcosted or underperforming, whatever have you. They basically made Scions a little bit more accessible, but not necessarily like you have to take them, which previously they did. So
that being said, Guard just won a super major this last weekend. So
right, and what I'm saying is like, yes, they're very good, but no, like, they're not going to be... All right, you just shot my point. Screw you, Scott.
Well, I mean, they're a top army. They are. But it's like, I think your average player struggles with them because they don't have that durable OBSEC. Because, let's be honest, your average player stands out in the open on objectives. Thinks they're going to live most of the time.
Yep.
And in this game, that's just not realistic. Although at that event, I don't think he played the pure Terminator spam. He played Manny Chima in the finals, and it was Manny Chima runs like Talon Masters, and he only has 25 Terminators. So according to Charlie, that's the incorrect amount. You should have double that or triple that. But yeah, double that probably. But yeah, so, but I think what you're saying, there's a high, I think there's a skill cap there on these guys because they're the way that, because how weak their actual infantry is and their OPSEC. But it, honestly, if they had good primary play on that game, on their armies too, I don't think they'd be beatable.
But that's my point, is that if you're going to tone guard down, you should bring up some of the other stuff. Like, you can't just take the snippet of Lehman Russes and Karshkins are overpowered, nerf them, and expect the same, you know, the win rate to drop by a couple percent. It's going to drop substantially because there aren't a lot of usable data slates on the, in that book. Yeah. Now, that I might be speaking out of turn because, you know, other stuff hasn't been utilized yet, and maybe there's some stuff I didn't see. But, like, as an example, Rough Riders seem good, except for they can't breach. And they're fast. And you can possibly force some stuff out with like Death Strike missiles, but that's your army essentially. They're pretty expensive. The Death Strikes are like what, 170, 150? I don't know. They drop substantially. They're a lot better than they used to be, but they're still only one shot. And your opponent can just choose to be like, well, I'm not gonna get charged by Rough Riders. I'm just gonna eat all these mortals. I don't care. Yep. Rough Riders aren't getting to me. You know. So yeah. Falls to that too. So I'm just saying that my whole point, which almost got shattered by your guard one of super major, but is that when you look at stuff, we have to look at the whole picture and we have to adjust other stuff too that's not performing in a codex. And unfortunately, a win rate is an imperfect data point for that. But the breaking out the whirlwind of rage and what secondaries are doing, those really do help anyway.
Yeah, 100% agree there. I guess other kind of news stuff right now. There's a World Leaders FAQ that was sad.
Sad is an understatement. That was a main rulebook FAQ thing that they just put in there. I don't know.
Yeah.
How about, kill my rhino for blood type points? Is that a thing? Yeah. How is that not a question in there?
Because that's legitimately, can I put nobody in it and get a blood type point when it dies?
Yeah, granted, I don't think you're in a phase, so you don't get two at the end of like the command phase of the first turn. But I think you would get a blood type point.
Yeah,
not that I would do that, but
for our league, for our group, our club league, I ruled no, you can't do that.
Okay. It's technically died before the game begins or whatever.
Well, and some of the other FAQs, so like FLG ruled at Cherokee Open that while Angron was dead, before you rezzed him and brought him back on the board, you could pick which of his three things he would have when he came back on the board. Not just that you could do it while he was in reserves, while he was literally dead, you could pick it.
That's weird. That seems weird. Yeah. To me. I don't think you could be able to pick it because he's not targetable.
Well, and that's what I've had a few people ask me. It's like, if he's not on the board, can I pick it? And I'm like, no, he has to be on the board. So if you bring him down in your movement phase, if you're past the command phase, he doesn't get to do it because he's not there.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's kind of like handing out the full rerolls. Like, I could do that when I'm in reserves. No, you can't do that. Like with Helbrecht or something.
Right.
Yeah.
But well, that one's a little bit different because you're not, his is just picking something. Those are like, I target a unit, it rerolls. You can't target something that's in reserve. However, I don't think you can activate command phase abilities that don't have a target when you're not on the board. I don't think that's legit.
Yep.
Same thing, you can't use the command reroll stratagem on stuff that's in an open top transport because they can't be the target of the stratagem.
But activating anything when you're off the board, like it's like if your warlord's in reserve and he has the 5-up regain CP on a failed, you know, when you spend CP, getting that back, you can't do that. And that's just an ability, but he's not on the board. So that's kind of how I viewed it, you know.
Well, if you remember, it used to be that you could, and then they were like, ah, that's not intended. So, and they FAQ'd it, so people were, so.
Yep.
It's like the Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come.
Well, I guess I always view it, if you're not on the board, it's like you don't exist. None of your rules happen. Because, like, I've had people ask the Alaris Terminator Unleash the Lions, can I use that when they're in reserves? And it's like, no, you got to target them. You got to wait till they're on the board. So you got to wait till you deep strike them as one big blob. Then the next turn, you can actually split them apart.
I love that stratagem, by the way.
Yeah, it's freaking cool. I mean, you're only taking like 2 to 3 max right now, but I think when ninth first dropped, I think I took like 10 of them and I did that. I was like, ah!
Just because I can. Ah! Where the swarm?
You didn't pick grind because I had a 10-man unit. Now I have 10 little guys running around.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so I think that's it for FAQs. I don't. The guard one's been out for 2 weeks, but yeah, there's not. I don't think there's too much like big in there, other than I think when you give your orders, when you get out of a rhino, you can, or get out of a chimera, you get like additional order or something like that. It's kind of
Yeah,
weird.
but it specifically says it that you
Yeah.
can. And that's different than assuming you get it.
So, that's kind of it for like news and stuff. I mean, the World Leaders one was sad. I hope that World Leaders FAQ makes me a little nervous about the FAQ that's supposed to come at the beginning of Q2. I assume that's going to be after Adepticon in early April. Makes me really nervous about that one. I hope they're just not dialing stuff, just like kind of mailing everything in and phoning it in before, 10th drops here, which we're kind of expecting at this point. I really hope that's not the case. That they still care about the competitive meta, because there's a lot of big tournaments between now and the middle of the summer when 10th is going to drop.
I don't think it will. I mean, Mike Brandt is in charge of the data slate, right? So, his job is to essentially nurture this competitive scene now, you know? And I don't think that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I really hope not. I mean, I hope I'm wrong.
Anyway, moving on to our next subject. This is actually an interesting one. We saved this question. This was a question we got a little bit ago, but it is enough of a question that we feel we need to like do a segment about it. And the question is like, how do you value your resources? I believe if I can read it verbatim for you, it is phone alt tabbed. Thank you, phone.
You
It
want me to read it?
says. No, I got it.
Okay.
Committing resources and weighing the over under on what to commit. Given our new Marine meta, it feels like the deployment and the trading game is going to be crazy for the rest of ninth. What do we think about this? So this is an interesting question because as much as it's kind of like giving a snapshot of time frame there, this is a question that I think everybody should be aware of and what it is and what it means and the first thing to know is the talk about let's get some definitions out there. So what is a defined resource? We're talking units on the board here in what we're talking whether it's a long range anti-tank resource, it's a anti-infantry resource, it's an objective holding resource. You know, these are different things that the units do and eventually how you balance your building your army. And the first thing that everybody does is they build what they want to play that they think is cool. Everybody does it. But then the next step is, okay, well, realistically, how do I win games with this? And that always steps back to playing the mission. So when we create lists, we are making a certain set amount of resources to play the mission. So some people are going to have different lists full of the different resources that fit their play. And that all stems back from what they like to play. You will find people that are chasing the meta and are playing net lists or whatever. At some point, somebody came up with that thinking this would be cool. And that doesn't necessarily mean that's the person you're playing across the table from you, but it is the original point. And this is what we're going to base all of our stuff off of, not necessarily the net listers. So, in summary, to start off, what a resource is it's a unit, whether it's a Grot to a Terminator to a Castellan Knight. You know, those are different types of resources, and some of them have multi-purposes. The other portion of this is how do you decide what to do with your resources when they have to do multiple things? And this is a really interesting question. Why we saved an entire segment for it is, you know, it can break out into a bunch of different meanings, right? Because it's like, well, do I charge here or do I hold this objective and not charge? Or is it, do I split fire 20 shots here but 10 here? Or what's the math there that does that? Or it's, well, do I need to have more OBSEC heading in this direction than this direction, or say the right side of the board versus the left side of the board? because I'm taking losses on that side of the board, or he's got more op sec over there, so I need to reinforce some stuff. Or do I need to bring more anti-infantry over there? So it's a really interesting question that came up, and I really wanted to touch base on it. But Scott, what is your definition of what you think resources are in the game?
Oh, I think, yeah, along the same line, but there's also just activations as a resource. Like, how many times can you activate, like, to be able to actually do things? So that managing that portion too, like for to be able to do actions and things like that. So, there's a lot of missions. Like, I just played the Scouring the other night with Custodes, and I chose Banners, and then they also have the activation on top of an objective during that mission too, and it's like, turn one, it's like, all right, how do I put up three banners plus put up, plus do an action on one of these and have the resources to be able to do that? So, managing that, as well as the units, like you said, kind of managing that. And sometimes I think it's just army dependent. Some of your be the trading game, like being able to manage that trading game, some armies just cannot trade. Like Custodes, it's like if you want to get into a trading match, I'm not going to trade 500 point units for your 100 point unit on an objective.
Right. And if you are to do that, you are going to lose. So we've got that, the general idea of how to use resources and how we generate resources. So moving forward, how do I decide what I'm going to do? So I'm a reactionary player. What that means is that I look at the board state pretty much every turn and I adjust what I'm doing accordingly to what's happened. What that does for me is that allows me to have more free flowing resources on the board state, and it also allows me to manipulate my opponent's resources more because I'm like, okay, this happened. If I do this, then this is more likely to be the outcome here. And how I decide to do that is really interesting. It's one of the things that I think makes me a great player is that I'm able to analyze and assess what my unit is going to take damage wise and what it's going to take my opponent to kill it, and I take that and I will use that to my advantage. I totally call it baiting or whatever you want to call it. It's not necessarily baiting. It's like, if you don't deal with this, I'm going to score points, and if you do deal with this, I'm going to make sure it costs you. And that's the best type of resource, in my opinion, where it's scoring me points or it's hurting my opponent, to do so. As an example, a 100-point unit sitting on an objective that has a bunch of buffs on it that I wouldn't normally buff it with, but all my other stuff can hide or be out of line of sight or not in charge range or some other situation where I can use those buffs on that unit and make it so that stuff has to either expose to kill it or they leave it alone and I score those points. Either way, for me, it's a win-win. So that's the first way that I like to use my resources. Scott, what's the first way you like to use your resources?
Well, I'm definitely less of a reactionary player than you are. I'm more of a I'm gonna I put things out there and trying to give a
Can call it
puzzle for them to
aggressive.
solve.
Aggressive is fine.
Sure,
That's what
sometimes
I
it's
mean. It's not what I would call it, but it's what the community knows as a play style.
I try to get my opponents to react to me more than me reacting to them, I guess it might be the way.
I
And I
think the
try to
way I like
project
to
with
call it is like you'd like to present puzzles to your opponent and have them try to unravel it, and hopefully they don't. Whether
Yeah,
it's
it's
like a big 11 tanks that you can get out of and score points out of, like how are you going to deal with this? It doesn't
Yep.
necessarily matter if I'm exposed or making you get exposed. It's going to happen.
That's kind of the threat overload type situations, things like that. So I guess how I manage my resources, trying to keep things like when I know I have a vital resource that needs to be around late game because it can score me points, making sure those are out of line of sight, staying alive. If I do have to present something, it's something that I'm willing to sacrifice because just the deadliness of the game, like anything you present, it's gonna die. Like I played in the Tau with the Custodes, and like I presented a five-man warden squad on the center objective where he could see it and shoot it. The only way he could get positioned to shoot it with both of his crisis suits was if he put one of his crisis suits about 6 inches away from one of my 10-man custodian warden blob. So he could put it there, but he was going to be trading that squad for it, because he had, well, one of the two squads had to be there because he could only fire and fade one of them away. So that was kind of my whole goal there, because I was behind a wall with the 10-man squad. So he chose to go into it, and I mean, that squad, when you turn off rerolls and transhuman, it's just, you know, the four pinball, it's just kind of stupid how durable something becomes.
Right.
But, you know, but I forced him to trade resources that he made the decision to try and stop me from getting, I think it was like a 4-point swing basically, because I was going to hold that middle objective and stop him from getting decisive action too. So he got 4 points. So it was like an 8-point swing in the end. Sure. He made that decision, but it cost him that crisis suit blob. And then I also was able to pile onto one of his home field objectives. So I stole an objective from him later on. So I traded basically 8 points there at the beginning to be able to basically leapfrog up my unit of wardens up, so, and tag other stuff too. So
sure. So one of the things for me that is really helpful when I'm assessing the board is keeping score every round, so I know where I'm at, because that's going to help me determine where my resources need to go. Like if I'm behind on primary and I need to start prioritizing it, I might throw extra dudes exposing them to get primary, or at least force more exposure out of my opponent. Something needs to give in that situation. Or if I'm like, okay, I'm a little bit behind on primary, he only has a couple dudes here and a couple dudes here, this unit can clean it up, but it's a lower chance. What am I going to do? You know, how am I going to utilize this to maximize my potential? And generally speaking, I mean, not generally speaking, it is. When you roll dice, it's a bell curve, right? There's never a 100% probability to do anything, and there's never a 0% probability to do anything. There's always a chance, and it's a bell curve. So if you don't know what a bell curve is, it literally looks like a bell on a graph, you know, standing up like the Liberty Bell.
Basically your probability of hitting the average and where you'll fall on that curve. So
correct. So if I were to gather it, the closer you are to the left side of the graph is your least, or your lower rolls, your ones and twos, and the top front side of the graph is like your double sixes and all that stuff. Just for simplicity's sake of how I'm going to describe how I decide to use my resources. So I like my line of where I'm going to put myself be closer to the x-axis, or whatever I don't remember the name of the graph, the point, whatever. It's been a long time since I've been in high school math, okay? But I like it to be on the lower end of the probability, because then it's generally going to take me more power to do so, but I
guarantee it more. You're overcommitting at that point.
I overcommit a lot, but I do it in such a way where it's like, okay, this unit wasn't really doing a whole lot, but it can kind of peek one guy or two guys out to shoot. I might do that, or a tank peeking around a corner, which normally I wouldn't. That would keep myself concealed, but I might do that if it brings my probability up quite a bit. And so what I mean by that is, like, if I need, you know, 6 wounds to go through at AP2 or AP1 or whatever I need to go through, I'm just going to calculate real quick how to do that in my head. And that's one of my strengths too, is being able to calculate that. But like, I know that I need like 1.5 impulsors to shoot there, so I can't have a half impulsor. I only have 3 guns on there, 2, and one of them was pretty useless, a storm bolter. So I've got the Sky Talon array and the multi melta. So you know, I just kind of have to figure, okay, well, the melta is strength 8, so it does better wounding into this unit. So if I put the melta there plus 1 impulsor, I've got a good shot. I'll put the Sky Talon over here. But like, again, you can run yourself into trouble doing that. But I'm saying, like, this is what I need to happen this turn. This is what I'm going to use my resources to do. I'm going to use the impulsor to attempt to split fire. Although if I don't do enough damage the first time in that, you know, like, okay, yeah, well, only one died, then I might commit the whole thing to it.
You get some more knowledge.
It's amorphous, right? It changes as you roll dice. So don't be thinking that this is the law. I'm just saying this is what I generally do. So, and then if I do split fire that other one and I do get both, then, you know, I have zero, I have like very minimal shots wasted, and I've got maximum potential out of them both. But you can't go by the odds. Like, well, you know, statistically, I should have made 5 out of my 10 four ups. I can't tell you how many times I've rolled 5 out of 10 four ups and I've actually gotten, or, you know, 10 four ups and I actually rolled 5. I guarantee you most of the time I have not. But that's
Yes.
just how statistics work, right? Because a six passes and a four passes on the same statistical graph still gives you that bell curve average of I hit 50%. So it, like I said, it can be fickle, but it is what it is. So I'm sorry, I'm rambling, Scott. Do you have anything to add?
Well, I think part of the thing with like overcommitting and undercommitting to do certain things also depends on the game state. Like you kind of are saying, like, if you're down in a game and you're trying to make up points, you might be undercommitting into certain areas because you're spreading your shots out, trying to like, more or less get lucky, I guess, on that. So you have to undercommit in order to score points. But like, if there's like an objective, like a big swing where like if you kill a unit off, it stops them from getting hold more on the primary, so you get knock 4 points off their primary. If they're doing like an action there to stop an action to kill something, that's where you really need to put all your resources in it to make sure something dies so the action doesn't get off or something like that. So, or if that unit survives and it's going to get in, it's going to tag everything in your army. So you want to make sure it dies. So just making sure something is really dead. So like sending in like 10 Terminators into something that you just have to have dead.
Right. No, I mean, that's basically the lay of the land, how to utilize, your resources. So step one, I tell everybody this, take score. If you don't
Yes.
know what you need to do with your army because you don't know what the score is, I can't help you. Like, the score is how you win games. If you just want to kill stuff, that's fine. Like, go do you. It's fun.
Whenever I'm
But,
playing a game and my opponent is not keeping score, and they're just like, "Oh, you can just keep score," and I'm like, "All right, I guess you're going to be in trouble because one, you have no way to do, no way if there is a discrepancy in the scores. Not, I'm trying to keep a fair score, but if there is a discrepancy, you have nothing to like say, no, it's not that because you don't have a score. When the judge comes by, they're going to believe me because I was keeping score. But also like." You just don't know what the game state is unless you ask me what it is. Where I know
right.
what it is because I'm putting in the score and I'm looking at it and I'm keeping track of it. Where
Yep.
you're just playing the game and hoping you're going to win. So if my opponent says they're not keeping score, I'm like, all right, that's. I feel it increases my confidence in the game. I still want to play my game, but it increases my confidence level. And if I know my opponent doesn't care about the score.
Sure, absolutely. And one of the things that I'll mention is like as I'm keeping score and I'm keeping track of, falling behind and how I'm going to make up points, I'm not going to just willy-nilly split fire. I'm going to go specifically for something. But there are times too where I will stop my unit doing an action so that they could do a charge move or shoot something or do something because ultimately, let's say I'm doing a banner that I could easily put up next turn. As long as I clear what's in front of me. So, but the only thing I have to do a banner is this assault interceptor squad, let's say. So, but they have a good probability of wiping that unit next to them, and they won't take much damage back. I'm not gonna put that banner up. No, I'm not saying like banners is probably a bad one because you get to see the lay of the land before you can put the banner up. But like, if my plan for them was to R&D that turn. But clearing this unit out stops them from four primary, and then also like maybe tears down a banner, so net of 5 points versus the four I would have gotten from the R&D. I'm gonna do that instead. But
Knowing you
like I
have another
said,
turn to put an R&D up later too. You can do the
yeah, you
R&D
have
again then.
one turn of leeway with R&D as long as you did it every turn before that.
Yeah.
But just thinking about how. Your scoring points doesn't mean like you just mechanically drop in an R&D or whatever. You got to think about what denial they can do too. So denial is another form of, resource gathering. It's how can I stop my opponent from scoring points with this unit too? So not to overcomplicate things, but basically, that's how I use, where to commit and all that stuff is the scoreboard is the chalice, the Holy Grail, will you? That's going to tell me what I need to do, and then my unit's data slates fit into whatever the puzzle on the board state is, right? So the overall movement is set by pretty much the Holy Grail of the scorecard, and then the The positioning and line of sight and shooting is all dependent on what data slates I'm using into whatever. Like, I'm not going to take 10 guardsmen and try to shoot them into custodes. I'm not going to kill anything, right? I'm mostly las guns. Even Karshkins struggle a little bit into them. They
The
need the
Emperor's
banner
Chosen,
to,
yeah.
yep.
Well,
So
they get through there then, yeah. They get through the Emperor's Chosen
if they
for
have the
banner.
banner, they get through the Emperor's Chosen thing. But if they don't have the banner, it's just tough go. So, but like, you got to recognize what your target priority's got to be with your different units, and your data slates are going to be your number one go-to there. Now, if I'm playing something that has melee to it, the other resource here that I can't stress enough that I never see utilized to the fullest unless I'm playing either a top player, but like I've taught Scott how that to do this well. Scott has picked it up great, but using every single inch of your pile-ins and consolidates and setting them up correctly. I can't tell you how many times I see people just charge into units and not use their charge move correctly either. And then when they did a lazy charge move, then their pile-ins are really screwed over because you have to end closer to the closest unit to you, closest model to you. And if you don't set it up correctly, like, oh, I'm not quite touching you, so then when I move my 3 inches, I'm pretty much almost touching you, but now I'm more close to this unit, this model, so then in my consolidate, I can come around that model, etc., etc. But doing it correct, and this is showcased in the Cherokee Open Finals, where Brad Chesser was basically told to do his pile-ins and consolidates correctly instead of lazily. And you can see, now I'm not talking trash, Brad's a great player, he made it all the way to the finals, but like, not utilizing correct pile-ins and consolidates really hurt him that game. Not that Dark Angels were really going to lose that game anyway, because the dude only moved his models like, what, 16 times? But what I'm saying is that he could have given himself a better chance had he accurately done those moves and known, if I do XYZ. And then the other flip side of this is doing it to your opponent. So let's say your opponent strung out his army or like a big unit. So you can charge them with one and charge on each side, and then you can have units in between that are not engaged, not within 4 inches, but are closer than the two charge units. So when they pile in, they can't get into combat with you and they can only move forward, but it might pull them out of coherency. So you might have just completely locked a big unit in. You can do that too. So just utilizing the pile-in consolidate and the rule that you have to go to the closest model to your advantage in both phases is something that a lot of people miss, and I think will help up a lot of games. But
The other thing with big units, when you're like one thing to know with the big units, if there's a model in there that you know they don't want to pull, like the banner in GSD, tag that fucker. Like that's the one you want to touch, because that's the one that's not going to get pulled, because that's the one that brings guys back. So let him, if you tag that one, then they, unless they have the spell, they have no way to shoot when they out of com once they get out of combat. So
Right, and I
big
would
help there.
base that dude if you can. Base him.
Yeah, don't
Basing
let him
is
do
also
anything.
another good form of move blocking, because you can take somebody and completely eliminate their pile-in step. Like as an example, Root, when we played last time, charged one of my interceptor squads on one side and then Grodson and piled and based me so that if I did interrupt, I was only going to be able to swing on Grots, and then the other two guys were just lost to the wind. So.
Unless you're a knight with that fallback or the pylon strat, then you can go wherever you want, even if you're
I
based.
get, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Scott.
I had a thought on so when your opponent isn't properly utilizing their resources, like they're over or under committing into certain areas, what do you do to take advantage of that? Like, what type of things do you do to take advantage of those situations?
Well, if they're undercommitting, they're hurting. They're just doing it to themselves, right? I don't really need to do a whole lot there because my units are living. What I might do is like, okay, well, that unit should have died. It's gonna hide behind the wall now and be a problem later. That's a main thing I do with that.
It just
But
compounds the game because then they just don't have as much resources, so.
yep, the overcommitting portion of that is twofold. One, it's either they overexpose themselves, and now I can pick apart what I want to pick apart, which is what I do to a lot of people, is that you don't want to give me all this because I'm going to take my choice of something that you need later and it's dead.
Yeah, I've been victim.
Or if I, as an example, my Eldar, I'm just gonna leave. Like, I'm so fast, I don't need to be there anymore. I'm like, all right, bye. You overcommitted to this side, now I can leave, right? And you could end up scoring very little on primary or giving me board advantage, which board advantage is what this game is right now. So those are how I take advantage of that. And yes, I know you've been victim to that several times.
And like one thing to keep in mind with like the trading game, especially if you're trading on objectives with Marines, is they, if it's a troop, they get to keep the objective. If you shoot them off it and you're not on it, they still maintain control of
As
it
long as they were on it in their command phase.
in their command phase. But and then the other part is with shock tactics, be careful when you actually blow them off an objective and you take it with your own guys, because you're just giving them the opportunity to score 4 points with shock tactics if they've
I
taken
mean,
that
shock
one.
tactics is kind of weird because if they took shock tactics, they're going to score well on it and you should just assume on it because if you don't trade back and forth, they're going to win. They're going to beat you in primary. So you need
It's
to, and you just have to assume they're going to get 12 to 15 on the secondary.
yeah.
So when you play against Marines like Charlies with the Dark Angels, how am I going to stop this? Well, I don't know if Shock Tactics is necessarily the best on Charlies Terminator spam just
Death
because they
recruiters.
don't die very easily and it's very hard to take an objective from them. So for them to take it back means that they're assuming that stuff's going to die. But if the idea is that he gets one objective at a time from you, like I'm not fast, so this is the one I'm taking this turn, and then I'm gonna take this one. But I don't know if he's been pressured enough. I think the one time he got pressured by GSC, it was just like a 2-point game. So we'll see about
Yeah,
that.
they got a rematch coming up.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
We'll see how that
So.
goes.
Yeah, that's my little blurb about resources. It was an excellent question, probably really good, really solid question. So, but
And obviously, if the person had the question, if you have follow-up questions, let us know and we can address those as well too. So.
absolutely. Follow-up questions are definitely welcomed, but that's pretty much what I got for tonight. Scott, do you have anything else you want to go over?
No, just kind of prepping for Adepticon. I did say they sent out a note because like one of the I don't know, drama or things that they had was that they had like a pretty onerous paint requirement to make top 16, not to play in the event, but to make top 16, you had to have a very well painted army, well above average. I think they sent out an email that basically said it's kind of up their discretion, not necessarily that you have to hit that exact number. Basically, if your army looks like crap and has three colors and doesn't meet the spirit of having a painted army, you're not going to be playing in the top 16. So, basically, not the Void Weavers from last year. They're trying to avoid that situation.
Good. Screw those Void Weavers.
I mean, I'm okay with I like it because like I mean, some of those are just like they just airbrushed three colors on those things and just called her a day. And yes, they met the minimum, but it's not not the spirit of what Adepticon is trying to do. Because
Sure.
people poop on Adepticon, but it is I think it's a hobby first GT.
Probably a safe assumption because some of those guys are pretty damn good hobbyists. I've seen some of their stuff, so. Pretty nice.
So this time next week, you and I will be probably somewhere in the middle of our fourth game or nearing the end of our fourth game.
Yeah, so I don't know if we're going to get a podcast out next week. At least not until early the next week. Might do a Tuesday one and then flip around and do a Thursday one. The next two episodes are going to be the Adepticon recap, and then we're going to do a team tournament recap. So I think there's enough information from both those where I think if we try to do them both in the same episode, you guys would just have a mega episode. And it's good to kind of separate them and get the different because they are completely different tournaments. So, but it's a good time. So we're looking forward to it. But if you guys have any questions, shoot us a message. If you want to check us out on the Patreon, you can check us out at www.patreon.com/AW40K. We also have a nice spiffy little website, advancedwarfare40k.com. You can check us out there, see our little thumbnails and our little descriptions about all of us and see what we're doing. And if you want some extra help, just go ahead and sign up. But that's all I have for you guys tonight. I thank you guys for listening, and we will catch you next time.